The way we work is changing. Here at the Ministry of Defence, we've been taking a serious look at how our people can work more flexibly across the whole force. The armed forces offer a package of modern, flexible working opportunities where operational capability allows. These have the aim of reducing stress, improving work-life balance, and helping people continue their careers through changing personal circumstances. In this series, you'll hear about our servicemen and women's experiences of flexible working, how it's helped them to perform at their best, along with some vital information about how flexible working might benefit you. Squadron leader Davina Fisher spent 18 years as a full-time regular before joining the reserves in 2019 following a two-year break.
When I was in as a full-time regular, flexible service wasn't really an option. It wasn't really talked about, didn't really exist. It was mooted a few times, but that was it. So when I left because I didn't really have any other options that I felt that suited our family circumstances. But when I came back again, flexible service was now introduced really for the regulars. And yes, had it been available previously, I probably would have considered that. But coming back into the reserves, I went into a role where I was able to work flexibly and deliver my role flexibly. I then changed jobs in the reserves in 2020. And from that, I'd learned a lot more about it and decided that actually that works better for my situation and that's what I'd like to do. And I had an agreeable chain of command who said, well, we're output driven, not presenteeism. So it worked out okay.
So what's your current commitment as a reservist, your basic commitment?
So I do 180 days a year, which roughly works out to three and a half days a week. So my way of working is that I work in school hours, which allows me to drop children off, pick them up. And I then work even more flexibly, like throughout school holidays, where again, it's very output driven. So at 180 days, it's not really when you work it out that much less than somebody full time who are doing 5 days a week. I'm roughly doing 3.5 days a week.
So what difference has it made to you and your family, this current setup?
Oh, huge. I'm married to someone else who's in the services. And he is currently married on a company to a Royal Marine down in Portsmouth. So I am primary carer, primary parent as such, at home. And it has allowed us for both of us to work, which is great. It's allowed me to get back into the workforce, which is what I wanted to do. I needed to do for myself. It also allows us, we don't have any options for wraparound care here. We don't have any family on the mainland. So it has allowed us to work around terms, school. I drop the children off. I'm able to pick them up. I can take them to their activities. There's a whole raft of swimming and piano lessons and all sorts of things that kids seem to do. But I can be there to do that, which is something that we wanted. Yes, there are, of course, other options if you can afford to go down that route. But the ability to be present in work and be present with my children is what we needed in our domestic situation.
And indeed, coming off the back of 18 years of service, how do you think you would have felt or you would have coped if you hadn't been able to work?
I was able to retire at a pension point after 18 years. And it was just after the birth of my second child. And we had to make that hard decision on what we were going to do next. And the decision was that I would leave. And it was a sensible time to make that decision. And that kind of worked for us. I had 2 years as stay-at-home mother. And whenever more postings happened, we'd moved away for 2 years and then moved back to the village where we had bought a house a couple of years previously. And when I came back, I needed to go back to work. I needed that professional stimulation that I wanted to do and deliver something and feel useful in the world again beyond my mother duties. Plus, as I could see, my children then needed more nursery time, getting prepared for school and so forth. And that's kind of what made me then look at coming back into the reserves. Going back in full time wasn't necessarily what I wanted. I was worried about what that would look like, how I would be able to juggle the predominantly solo parenting. We knew deployments, etc., were coming up as well. So I started off light, took a lighter contract and realized this is totally doable. And then went on to this 180-day contract, which again has been totally doable and it just works. for the first time, it just felt right.
How much of that would you attribute to a really solid, supportive management structure?
Oh, 100%. One of the most important things I find is that the trust from my chain of command that I will deliver what it is I need to deliver is paramount. They know that I will work when I can. I have core hours. I have core days, core hours, you know, during school time that I will be there, or I can take phone calls. I can do Skype calls, whatever it will be. I will also work around those hours as well to make up my commitment, and their trust that I do that is what makes a huge difference. And they facilitate it as well. I mean, I have all the screens and IT and support equipment I need at home to work from home. We're going to be introducing and trialing lots of different types of technology to make sure that we can make this smarter working arrangement suit everybody. And, you know, they're very open. If you want to work in the office, if you want to be in the office, you can be in the office. And if you want to work from home, you can work from home. And it's all those little things that they're doing to say, okay, so you're working from home. What do you need? What do you need to make this work for you? We have a team meeting every Wednesday morning with the broader team. And one of the things they've done recently is that they shifted it 15 minutes to the right to 9:15, because there's a couple of us on the team do a school run. And if you get stuck on the school run and you're dashing back to try and make a 9 o'clock meeting, you're running in on a clatter of bits. So they just shifted it 15 minutes to the right and said, we'll have it at 9:15. That gives you time to get in, grab your coffee, regroup, sit down and be ready. Everything's sitting in the house. If I were then to travel to work, I'd be losing another sort of 20, 30 minutes. If I had to leave work, I'd be losing another 20, 30 minutes productivity to go back to pick the children up. Whereas here, they're gaining an extra hour out of me per day because I'm losing that commuting time. I'm straight into it. I can just come in and work. So if anything, they're probably getting more out of me than if I didn't have this flexibility and alternative working arrangement. And I know we're really privileged and lucky to be in that position, but it's brilliant in that. So I've only got positive things to say about it right now on that front.
I wonder if a lot of women in any profession listening to this would hear that and think, she has the absolute perfect setup. How do people react when you tell them your situation and the flexibility that you are afforded?
I know I'm lucky. I have landed on my feet, let's say, with this. My job is in recruitment and I try and recruit for other roles. And I know that I show what good could look like for those who are in a similar position as I am, who want that kind of work-life balance. So this does put me in a enviable position, I think, in some areas. But of course, yes, it's not always easy. There are the challenges that can sometimes come with that. Sometimes when you're at home, you struggle to step away from the computer. You could be sitting at nighttime. I have a nice little setup, but I'll sometimes just go in and just quickly log in and check on something. Or at a weekend, because my office hours are not always set, I feel the need to just keep on working. And sometimes I have to remind myself that I am actually part-time and to step away from it and, you know, deliver my output, but don't try and do more than what I should have to do. You know, we have regular meetings and that's the other great thing. You know, there isn't a working day that I'm in that I don't have several conversations. Every couple of weeks or so, we try and aim to go into the office at a time and hour that suits as well, which is really positive. We'll meet up and have a bit of face-to-face time if we want. And it's not a checking up thing. It's just sometimes you do miss out a little bit of that, you know, water cooler moment that you would have in the office. So we will generally Skype and chat to each other if there's something you want to mull over. So I don't feel too detached from a general office environment. It is still there.
I'm interested in that self-pressure. How often do you have to remind yourself, as you alluded to there, about the fact that you are a part-time worker and how easy it is to just nip and check? So how do you manage that?
I try. One of the things I've actually just recently done is get an Alexa plug that is set on certain hours to turn my office on and turn my office off. And I've had to do it, but just to stop me doing that automatic login. So I've set it on a routine that it will not turn on before a certain time and it will turn off after a certain time to stop me just accidentally logging in and getting sucked in for the next hour. But of course, that is the joy, though, of my arrangement, that if I feel I've got work to do, I will do it and I will log it and say that I've done it. And then, you know, balance that against a different week. And if therefore the following week I have the children have got an activity on that I want to go to or play on or something, I will just step away for those times. And there's no guilt, there's no pressure, there's no conflict in my mind that I should be behind my computer right now because I know I've delivered it.
We've talked about you. What impact, mm-hmm. if any, has it had on your husband, you doing flexible working?
Oh, well, that's, yeah. So he leads a very big team, actually, down in Portsmouth. He has a lot of people who have now got all the challenges of post coming back to work and the same kind of challenges and stuff I've had as well. He was deployed for 7 months last year, and that was a huge juggle for me. And if anything, it gave him a massive insight into what it must be like for the working mother in particular, who has all of the mother load responsibilities. And I know that's, I'm not trying to make that sound in a sexist way, but in many cases, that's just how it falls. And it gave him a lot of insight into, you know, that juggle is real, that parenting juggle and working juggle is real. He has also taken that on board that he has lots of members of his team who may need to apply flexible working criteria too. And the best way he could approach that is leading by example himself. So he also has alternative working arrangements and he will work from home and in core hours on certain days, which therefore actually allows me to work a full day on days that I want to gain as much of my sort of work as possible. He will, on certain days, not have any face-to-face meetings after a certain time because he will have to go and collect the children or take them to an activity or be present so I can work. So yeah, he's really led by example on that front, which has in turn assisted me to do what I need to do, but in hopefully has also assisted his team to understand that this kind of idea and concept has to come from the top down. You need good leadership. You need people to understand what it means and also what you can do to allow your team to also deliver under the same sort of circumstances.
And how long do you think you'll carry on doing this?
At least for a good couple of more years. This contract I'm on and this arrangement is for another 2 years with option to extend, which I hope it will. So I'm kind of hoping, certainly while my children are young, I want to be able to maintain this kind of working arrangement. And probably when they've grown up a bit more, I will probably be enjoying this arrangement too much to want to change it to anything else anyway. Because I like having a little bit more balance to my life. I like being able to not have to cram in all my domestics into that witching hour between 5 and 7 o'clock at night. Instead, I can pace myself a lot better and have a bit more, claw back a bit more time for myself as well. There are quite a few people within the department who are working in alternative ways, and it seems to be very popular. And again, for us, it's led from the very top, where the top of JFD also has alternative working arrangements, and that mindset, that ability to do it has definitely flowed down. So I'm not my own here. And it's not just down to, you know, working mothers doing this. In my smaller team, we have two other male colleagues. And they don't have the young children at school issue or the married unaccompanied issue. They have a very different lifestyle, but they still have alternative working arrangements because their quality and balance of life is better for it. And that's being really strongly encouraged. It's available to everybody.
That was squadron leader Davina Fisher, who's found that the opportunity to work flexibly has given her the work-life balance she was looking for. The Ministry of Defence's Chief Operating Officer, David Blackall, says there are multiple ways that flexible working benefits everyone within defence.
There's clearly a very good opportunity through flexible working to make more kind of conscious choices about what work we need to attend a workplace to do most effectively and what work we can do at home or some other location that works better for us at the moment. And obviously many people have sort of busy lives and other commitments and are juggling work commitments with their partners or families. I certainly think for defence, one of the things we really need to be aware of is that we're in a competition for talent with the rest of the economy, we can see all the other opportunities for people in other bits of the public sector or other private sector organisations. Many of those organisations are stressing their expanded sort of flexible working offer. So for us to compete in terms of recruitment and retaining staff, that's really important. I think there's a really good benefit in terms of our diversity and inclusion. I think it sort of helps people at different stages of life when it can be a little bit harder than at other times to sort of maintain a 5-day in the office or the workplace drumbeats compared to having something that's more flexible. So I think that helps in terms of the people we can attract into and retain in defence. I'm very conscious that at many defence sites, you know, many people sort of drive to work. So we're all kind of spending a lot on petrol or diesel these days and pumping a lot of sort of carbon into the atmosphere. And if we can avoid some of that, that's got a sort of wider societal benefit as well as a sort of benefit to our own kind of, you know, household expenditure. And I do think we're finding ways with the new technology we've had made available over the last few years to improve our productivity through really using that technology well. And as someone who also has to kind of worry about the efficient use of property and the estate generally, as do many other people in defence, there is an opportunity here to right size the estate for the new kind of patterns we'll be working with in the future, and that will have a sort of financial benefit back to defence and the wider government in due course.
That's interesting what you say about equipment. Did you have that idea in place? Did you have those technologies in place? Were you ready for an explosion of flexible working? Has it been exacerbated by COVID, or had this been something that the MOD had been thinking about years previous?
So I think we had been thinking about it and making slow and steady progress. But what COVID introduced was an urgency to deliver it at a sort of pace and a scale we had never imagined delivering it before. And what we found, and we've possibly, you know, surprised ourselves a bit at this, was that when we put a huge amount of effort into it, we could actually roll this thing out at scale and at pace that probably none of us would have sort of sat and sort of devised in a sort of project plan if COVID hadn't have happened. So that's been a really good bit of learning for the organization. We have to be sort of careful with our equipment because we normally need to sort of accredit different items that they're safe to be connected to our networks, laptops and so on. So it's taken a little while to get a full range of things like headphones and sort of portable speakers and other things available on our sort of catalogs for people to order. But that's all there now. Managers should already feel sort of completely empowered to authorize the purchase of anything that's a sort of reasonable adjustment or that helps people work at home or in another location better. We're very happy to kind of support people to purchase all of those things to make this as easy to use as possible.
Indeed, and positivity rings through everybody who I've spoken to who's in it and who is working flexibly. Although when you might put it to somebody, one of the responses is, well, how can that possibly happen? Because you're working for the armed forces. How do you ensure that there is buy-in and understanding with people who might think, well, I'd really fancy a career working with the armed forces or within the MOD, but I just don't see how, given the perception of the armed forces, how I could work flexibly?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And the first thing I'd stress is we haven't got a single model of flexible working because we've got people doing, you know, a huge variety of different jobs in the organisation and working in all sorts of different workplaces. Some people work somewhere that looks sort of very much like a traditional office. Some people work in, you know, laboratories and workshops. Some people have roles that are very much tied into making sure a piece of infrastructure runs somewhere on the defence estate. And some people have to work in locations that have a, you know, particular sort of security wrapper around them. So I think what that means is that there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach to flexible working. What we need to explain to people is that this is something that you can discuss with your leadership and your management teams, work out something that works both for you and for the needs of defence. And in some roles, the balance can be sort of quite towards a lot of flexibility about where you choose to work. And in other roles, say for someone who's got to work on sort of classified systems a lot, they probably need to spend a higher proportion of their week, you know, on particular sites where they can access particular systems, for example. But still very few of us spend 100% of our time on only one type of work whilst we're working. And there are various things we do, you know, training courses and catching up with staff and one-to-ones, managing people when we manage people, town halls with teams and all those sorts of things that lend themselves very well to flexible working, even if sort of some of our core tasks require us to be in a particular location. So for me, it's all about at a local level, empowering people to kind of think that through in their teams, work out what works best for them as individuals and best for the organization at the same time, and striking that sense of balance.
And how big a culture shift is it, or has it been?
Well, I think it's been a huge culture shift, but interestingly, one that the whole nation's been going through at the same time. So it would have been much harder to make that shift if we were sort of the only organisation doing it. We've had this, you know, unprecedented external factor in the pandemic. And I think that's just proven to us that when the need arises, we can make very sort of rapid culture shifts. And I hope that's something that we sort of retain the memory of and can exploit more in the future in other areas to sort of change other aspects of our culture that we can modernize and improve.
And what about in terms of helping those line managers, those in managerial positions who may have not experienced such an influx or a demand for something like this? What training or help is in place for them?
So we have a guide available, both available within Defence, and it's available publicly, actually. It's on WK's, it's Defence's Flexible Working in You booklet. So that provides a huge amount of information for line managers and staff around both the kind of flexible working we've been talking about, but also some other things like career breaks and using unpaid leave that go into our sort of wider sort of flexible working offer. And alongside that, we have on ModNet, for those who have access to ModNet, the Future Workplace program team have developed a sort of rich range of resources and materials to help people think through the things they need to think through as teams, as members of staff, as line managers, as commanding officers. And that's all available for people to help them with this as well. Because we've taken a very sort of empowered approach to this, obviously that puts a lot of responsibility on individual leaders and commanding officers throughout the organisation. Some may, you know, in some instances have a sort of more traditional mindset about, you know, I'm only confident that work is done well when I can see it in front of my eyes being done, and so on. We think over time those attitudes will fade away because people will just get much more comfortable with the fact that what we think we know is really true is that we are able to deliver our defence output to get really great outcomes like our success in the sort of integrated review process for defence whilst working in this very flexible way. So I think partly time will overcome some of the issues. I think, you know, some challenges we're still working with. So we did a huge amount of work, say, to get IT into the hands of the end user with a kind of huge rollout of laptops during pandemic. We still need our workplaces to kind of catch up so that when we have meetings where some people are in the office and some people are working remotely, that we've got the right cameras, microphones, screens and so on in our meeting rooms and so on to make sure that you feel as included, whether you're sitting in a workplace that's on the MOD estate or sitting somewhere else. What we don't want is it to be a better experience at home or is a better experience in the workplace, but for it to be sort of equal. And so that isn't a factor in you choosing where you want to work. So there's some sort of longer term technology we need to continue rolling out to make it as good as it really needs to be.
And in terms of challenges, I know that some companies, some organisations might see job sharing as something that they are not quite set up to do. Is that something that you are able to facilitate?
I probably need to answer the question in two parts. So around the civil service part of the organisation, job sharing already exists. It's very successful. We've got some people in very senior positions like directors who job share really successfully and visibly. So that's been fantastic. I do know that we're also looking at that as an additional flexibility for the armed forces. And there's still work underway on developing a potential job share policy, but we're very keen on being able to offer that. And again, I think that's a key part of being a modern an attractive employer of choice. So we're really enthusiastic to do more work on that and see if we can find a way to land that for the armed forces as well.
What image do you think this gives to the outside world in general?
I think it can only be positive because I think we do have a little bit of a reputation of being kind of quite traditional and slow to change. And obviously lots of traditions in defence are actually sort of very important and have a lot of value. But we maybe need to do a little bit more to get the message out, maybe in how we sort of do our recruitment campaigns and so on, that we have changed in some fundamental ways and to really get across that even if you're applying for a role in the armed forces, we're taking flexible working really seriously. And we think really imaginatively about ways we can make that work whilst also supporting our people to do all the stuff they want to do to deliver defence outputs. I'm definitely in the group of people who see this as an irreversible change. You know, I think there was some debate at the very sort of outset of the big change when we first started in sort of lockdown periods and so on as to whether people would sort of snap back immediately to formal ways of working. And that has not happened. I think we've got really strong evidence that that hasn't happened. And that hasn't happened at all levels of the organisation. And I see very sort of senior military leaders still working flexibly. And if they do that, that sends a message that cascades here right down the chain of command that this is an appropriate way to organise your work and achieve a sort of balance that works both for you as an individual and for defence as an organisation. So I think this is here to stay, and this will in not too long be seen as thoroughly normal. And that's a very good thing.
That was David Blackall, Defence's Chief Operating Officer, explaining why flexible working is important for defence. You can find up-to-date information about the flexible working opportunities in the armed forces in the Flexible Working and You booklet. Find it online by searching Defence Flexible Service.